So, first of all, I'm very happy to welcome you all and to tell about my artistic praxis and my research practice in today's media and thinking, with the title Bodies of Water, Infrastructures, Mythologies and Memorialization. And I want to thank Dr. Anissa Kronberger and Dr. Natasha Frankenberger and Professor Henrietta Kunkel for the kind invitation. In my artistic practice, I deal with questions of ecology and intersectional feminism. There is an intention, an attitude to de-instrumentalize subjects, objects, and materials, and to ask how to work with, to think, to act, and live together in collaborative environments. So I address the questions of authorship and agency. And for today's presentation, I selected two projects, which I will go then more in detail. The first one is called River Oracle, and that thinks specifically from the situated practice, which is a thinking that I drive from Donna Haraway's situated knowledge. This means that the work has a specific reference to the place, so it stands in relation to the geography and the history, but also reflects on my own power position in making of it. Yeah. I want to start by reading from the work River Oracle, and this is part of the storytelling part that we have collectively written. After that, I will introduce some groundings, some concepts that are important for me. Maybe you have heard of some because we're also in the end of the semester, but maybe to bring out points, how I use it and what is important for me. And then in the end, I will give an insight to the plankton imaginary that is the film that we are looking today. It's an installation, and today we will see the film part, but I will tell you how it got to be, in what kind of context, and a bit of the setting of the exhibition, how it's shown. Beneath our identity marked by history, tradition, and power relations lies the story of a stronger and more powerful union, which is the union by means of an irrefutable web of water, whose strongest thread is a river. That web has the form of a great tree lying horizontally on a map. The tree trunk is formed by a large basin with numbers of irrigation paths, sewage channels, and creeks branching across. The roots are the numerous springs and the watercourses that originate in the upper part of the mountain ranges. And the branches are the canals, pools, and swamps in which the river is dismembered into a coast before being delivered to the North Sea. Plenty of stories have found habitat in this topography. It can have a shape of a tree as much as it can as a spider's web, a bird's nest. It can be a nervous system or a handprint, a hole in a rock, or an international harbor, a genealogical map, the lines of blood behind our corneas. Its structural logic, nevertheless, is that of a constant flow moving in relation to a seemingly solid planetary platform. Yet the tree beneath this story, that one that describes everything as a symptom of the presence of water and earth, has been irreversibly imprinted by the human layer. We have to imagine the tree lying horizontally on a garden where all kinds of electric source prune the ways of branches in order to keep the same electric source, the garden around, and the human caretakers working. Small and unconvincing branches are cut away in a logic that favors a thicker, heavier trunk to take shape. The river basin flows steadier, wider. No moors, no flooding disarrange the beauty of hundreds of liters per second running on a highway of bioparticles, phosphites, trash, freshwater fauna, plants, and industrial waste. In this metaphor, stumps would be the dams appearing here and there as beautiful arrangements to harvest energy. One trunk connecting roots on one side and branches on the other, a seemingly single narrative that acts as if it was an undoubtable conclusion. Because this is the way it is. All that we know must be the truth. What if we questioned this single story of truth and listened to the other planetary stories happening parallelly? A critical materialist debate is central to my artistic research practice. I often draw inspiration and refer to sources from new materialist and queer feminist literature, such as authors Karen Barrett, with their concepts of interaction, entanglement, and diffraction, or Astrida Neimanis, with her concept of hydrocommons that I use for the title as well, or bodies of water being the topic for today's series. So this series, the bodies of water, is based on the idea of fluidity of our bodies and offer it as a source of emancipation. I quote, water, in other words, flows through and cross difference. Neimanis continues, what sort of ethics and politics could I cultivate if I were to acknowledge that the unknowability of the other nonetheless courses through me, just as I do through her? End of quote. And here I come to use Barrett's interaction as I consider it important to the reading. In contrast to interaction, interaction is based on given context, being inter, between, but on relations that arise within phenomena, intra, within. The ability to act results from the relationship, not outside of it. So this is connected to the agency. And what was the agency again is we can basically understand it as the ability to act. So I quote, interaction goes to the question of making of differences of individuals rather than assuming their independent or prior existence, quote end. So interaction gives us a whole new way of thinking about the relationship which is other with matter, with materials, with nature and discourses. When these different things are in relationship which is other, our ability to do stuff changes, transforms and emerges. Interaction also acknowledges the impossibility of an absolute separation or classically understood objectivity in which an apparatus, which can be a technology or a medium used to measure a property, or a person using an apparatus are not considered to be a part of the process that allows the specific located outcome to be measured. So instead of that, I have an example. When I work with the camera, the apparatus and I are within the phenomena that make the process creation possible. So we are together in it, not separated. When we reach the river, we gather stones to build a fireplace in a circle. We feel energized by the proximity of the water. We use our hands, we think with them, and approach the surrounding from an individual and collective body. There is a flow in doing, in the touching, in listening. A ritual binding the body to the landscape. Sometimes it takes a while for beings in flow to meet each other and form relationships. activities in space in transition are always challenging to perform, sometimes impossible. Be patient. Learn to learn. Think of earth, soil, holes, energy, creativity. Plant weaving, fire making, swimming against the current, connecting with the river as a space. Walk at night when the sound and the silence are electrifying. Find green clay and water it down to build an oven. The environment is in a constant state of transition, a state of change in which nothing is fixed or static. This is the process of flow. In flow, it is difficult to fathom the dimensions of space, time, and content, because everything is in the process of becoming something else. What areas of your life or body are blurry, uneasy, difficult to place in a rest? How do the space you know but have no words to describe, smell, sound, feel, taste, or weight like? How fast or slow, far or near are they? The beings who live directly in the river region feel the rivers in the way that is all their own. They deal with them immediately and often. They deal with them intimately and often have experiences in common. They usually find their destination by moving upstream or downstream, guided by the rhythm of their song. Rhythmic navigation is part of their intrinsic magic. The companionship established between beings that exist in the process of flow, even if seemingly unconnected, can become integrative and produce composite beings. Relationships become articulated and interwoven in hydrologic as the beings become more stable and slow. Structures are constructed, alliances shaped, languages conjured. Their songs make futures manifest. If we listen closely to them, we can hear what it means to be part of the flow, to receive the immediate generosity of the river and the aftermath of what happens on the slopes of mountains that are transmitted more directly to them. For despite the fluid state of the water, the relationship that the river current forges remain solidly bound. We make music with stones and throw them back into the riverbed. Two boys walking by asked us what we are doing. We say we are asking questions to the river. They say, "How do you know the river is listening? How do you know the river is responding?" To come here knowing that we are a fragment within the hydrological life of rocks, sediments, and river flows is to accept a relationship already forged since millennia. River is a host, not a teacher. Why should we expect to be educated anyway? In fact, empathy happened way before. Out of imagination of a mutual understanding. You are a multitude of beings. You are the harvest of millennia. You will plant for other beings so that they can harvest in the time to come. Listening, touching, transforming. Stones and driftwoods, metal parts looking like bones, traces and fossils of different material bodies transforming, being digested by the river. Some slower than others. So, River Oracle. So we asked what kind of tools, techniques, and practice can we incorporate in our artistic processes where we create a space for the agency of the more than human actors, which more than human would be other species, entities, and human included. So we call the River Oracle a transdisciplinary body that emerged from the collaboration with the artists Paloma Ayala, Anne-Laure Francette, Melo Chua, Kay Zhang, and myself. It is about the practice of storytelling about the different relationships around ecology and history of water and about matters that we as collaborators felt were urgent to address. The project uses oracles as a tool to situate ourselves as humans in our relationship to water and combines speculative narrative practices. The oracle becomes a mediator between different feminist discourses on care, waters, ourselves, and the public. Here you see the Axpo-Holding hydroelectric power plant at Kaiserstuhl. We were in 2020. It's at the River Rhine and border between Germany and Switzerland. So working with historical and community narratives directly connect to space, place, and landscape matters to us. We approach the practice, our practice as a constellation of artists with different backgrounds, incorporating sound, visual art, programming, and collaborative networks. River Oracle is a way of thinking, feeling. We use River Oracle to work collaboratively, to develop artistic work, and to empathize our relationship to what which lies beyond the human. We ask ourselves, how do we create a collaboration with the more than human, with places, with ecosystems? So we started with printing cyanotypes. I don't know if people know how the technique, some have maybe tested. Yes. So we had a collective residency, Silhouettes, Potatoes, Herbs, and Fires, organized by Paloma Ayala. And we did a site-specific research for the Hohenrhein Triennale 2020. So the cyanotypes are exposed by sun and developed with water. So they're a photosensitive process, where these were imbued with the stories and emerged from the encounter between 10 of us, artists and scientists, in the river ecology of the Rhine. The science workshop was led by Anne-Laure Francette, and we considered working with plants, stones, wood, body parts, and water. Discussing the changing uses of the river, care, resilience, and resilience, destruction and repair, self-sufficiency, and interdependency. So some of our conceptual frameworks and research questions were, how can we integrate practice of care into our art practice? How does knowledge circulate? Observation, activation, acceptance, inclusion, relationality, put in relation, situational inventions. What does it mean when we use an oracle as a storytelling tool? Emancipatory questions of DIY practices. We don't want to romanticize magic oracle practices, but see them as a political act, as a tool for taking a rather animistic view. Looking at history from a critical point of view, acknowledging and rewriting marginalized history. Action, the making of, figuring out processes, giving time, space, and agency. Creating communities, making space, giving up control. Acknowledging anthropomorphism and the ethical questions or problems associated with it. Using the oracle as a pedagogical tool to learn from the more than human, even if we acknowledge that the river is not the teacher. So we summarized it up. So the collaborative project River Oracle is an intent as an artistic feminist research, is ended intended as an artistic feminist research and a tool to develop methods for working with oracles and to speculate with what a shift in anthropocentric thinking can have. Or even further, how can we dismantle destructive anthropocentric tendencies in relation to water bodies and ecologies, even though we absolutely are dependent on water to exist? Maybe intersectional ecological thinking. So these cyanotypes, from them we developed river oracle cards, and they consist of 21 cards that can be used to play a game like tarot-like game. And yes, this is today we take seriously the relationship to the river and the waters. And what we did in the end, 2021, I had an exhibition in Lucerne, an art space called Elephant House, Sick Elephant House. And I invited Paloma and Anne-Laure actually to talk about this their artistic praxis and these collective works, because I really appreciate also what they do in their practices. And what happened is that there was the lockdown just happening. So the exhibition we could open, but all the program we had to do online. And we decided not to do a talk or an oracle reading, but we did a website. And Paloma even learned coding during the lockdown by herself, and we did this. So we have the website. So this would be intended as a tool, relational tool for reflection, maybe self-reflection, and for raising awareness about ecological and political issues. And we were thinking that people can also use it wherever they are, in their beds or in the morning, just do the reading. Now I'm going to switch to this link and we will see how it affects the Zoom. Yeah, so that was the website. As you will see, there is Astrid Anemone's quote, which also very important. A little description, what is the oracle about? Then the task and how to develop a question. And when you went through this carefully and developed your question, you had three perspectives on the card. And what happens is that you think about the question and you would draw the cards and get from these 21 cards, we collected these stories that we had during this residency and also from all these participants, and rewrote them for the oracle, because we kind of brainstormed when we did the workshop. All cards, we kind of looked at them and wrote keywords and little stories. And actually, they are all like during this residency, like other stories and practices. So you always have keywords, descriptions, questions, recommendations, affirmation, and a affirmation. And you would have like sometimes some recipes, sometimes like books recommended in your card, what should you maybe read, or exercises to do. But this project has other formats. And maybe, so it's for me important to show also this all kind of the wide range of practices that in this kind of a collaborative process we could do. And we started having different formats, different invitations. Here, for example, is the portal conversation. That was a workshop and a reading of the cards at the Schädthalle Zurich art space in 2021. Where we actually did a reading for the exhibition itself. So not so much personalized, like on a person, but on a happening or in a space. Then we had, and I have to look, yeah. Then we had the human as a watery, as watery beings. That was an exhibition at Flussbad Garden Berlin. And here we saw the preparation of three big bath towels with then a booklet and a scene booklet that had the card readings and the texts. Then we had workshops called, we started with oracle learning from animists, learning for animals, plants, sticks, and stones. This was, for example, at the Basel University of Arts, Hyperwerk. We also had different formats like this I did with Paloma and myself. Then we did a kind of magic, making emancipatory spaces and traces, also at the Hyperwerk. Then Anlor did a project in Bremen, in the University of Arts in Bremen, with students where they revisited this sun printing action, but combined it with port water waste archive alongside with the river oracle reading and co-writing variations about mobility, hybridity, and transplantation. Then we had also Melo, Chua, and Paloma did, Melo is more someone also who works with sound and coding, and they did a listening to water collective oracle, which you could fed with recordings, field recordings, and they used vibration technologies to make images out of these field recordings, which then became also an oracle. So we were then invited to for invitation in Delft for to create an installation, and they wanted the whole spatial installation. We had actually this text, these stories, and this website. So they had the exhibition called Emotions Are Oceans, Bringing Water to Life in the Encroaching Desert. Life in the Encroaching Desert at Radio's Center of Contemporary Art and Ecology in the Netherlands, Delft, which was also a former water tower, and in the water body, in the containers, which were of course in that moment without the water anymore, it was the exhibition. So we decided to combine the oracle tool with collective storytelling and used a large format textiles as carriers, as a medium that serves as kind of a canvas, and printed these images by the sun and the water at the River Rhine. And its ecology, its ecosystem was influenced. So these are the first cyanotype prints, and these are 4 meters long now. Being with the dam is being in a complicated relationship. Humans living in the River Rhine watersheds are profoundly fed, profoundly tied to them, profoundly dependent on energy generation ventures, irrigation, transport and navigation apparatuses. Renewable energy generation is also a motor of profound national identities, an engineering achievement, a way of competing in the technological dimensions on human impact on Earth. The dam is a carrier of heritage and endurance as much as a power contest and destruction. Much like other aquatic industrial infrastructures, dams are based on utilitarian understanding of planetary systems. Water currents are treated as ecological services and become economic goods of uneven access. We overuse, we colonize, we create power imbalances around this invaluable resource. And we forget the agency of the entities thanks to which we can exist as we do here. Indeed, under anthropocentric logic, this can be explained as a matter of intuition. When thinking of rivers being the veins of a planet, we think of water that weave communities and ecosystems together. We think of linked cultural identities and networks of solidarity in which the intuitive action would be that the rivers remain in common land, inhabit public landscape, and make profit for local actors. Yet, in a counterintuitive relationship to the Rhine, river shores and water currents often belong to companies. The river is privatized in time and space. Sometimes governments give companies the confession of use of rivers for a few decades. For example, for the construction efforts undertaken by the company. Sometimes the company is partly state-owned or has contracts with host municipalities and simply stay there. For example, the company Axpo Holding AG owns thousands of hydropower, tidal power and pump storage plants in Europe. They call themselves the backbone of Swiss power supply. They own the shorelands around hydroelectric buildings. They control water usage for power generation purposes, including arrest of water flows and hydropeaking activities in river flows. They filter a massive amount of water on a daily basis, ridding the river of bigger waste products. They make jobs for people and supply almost CO2-free energy to most of the clean-looking Switzerland. There are impacts that involve us people only, like safe or equitable access to water as a basic human right, or a desire to create a spiritual, emotional relationship to water bodies, not only economical. Other impacts are more obscure. Irreversible damage to biodiversity being the saddest of things. Some species, like the white trout or salmon, have totally disappeared from areas in the Rhine where they used to make home or migrate. Birds like sand martins moved further from riverbanks to gravel mining sites. Their habitat arrested, making space for other species that can feel more comfortable around flow dumps and sudden hydro pickings. Algae overgrow in conditions where nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium compounds are concentrated, taking the ecological niche that oxygen-producing bacteria, plants, and phytoplankton had. Some flow fauna like coot, swan, or mallow dogs, to name a few, profit from reservoirs and artificial lakes. Close your eyes. Breathe. 1, 2 seconds in. 3, 2, 1 seconds out. 1, 2, 3 seconds in. 1 second out. 1 second in. Stay. Between you and the surrounding environment, there are rivers made of warm blood and electric impulses. In fact, it is a current that flows in velocities ranging 1.5 to 19 centimeters per second. Electric signals travel at speed of 70 to 120 meters per second. This infrastructure of life is common to many. It reminds us of the river and how hydrologically common our body functions are to other Earth functions. Somewhere inside those common life infrastructures exists a capacity to imagine the life of another, as another with another. Not only we are capable, but we are compelled to this relationship. So we returned to Axpo Holding hydroelectric power plant at Kaiserstuhl. This was 2021. And we started producing these big cyanotypes. We used a lot experimental techniques, not just the photogram technique where you put objects on top. We also used here, for example, wet sand. Here is the washing process, which is the stops the development and also fixes. So this chemical that is prepared on the textiles, which is also partly made of algae, is washed away. It's quite a physical task to do this. We also used exposure mixing with already using water, coming and lying them down and getting these watery traces. We used techniques of wrapping around objects in the surrounding. The chemical phase, the exposure phase, has this green color, but after washing it, we have we get this really strong sienna type, blue type thing. And here are some of the images that have become. And we also used part of the hydropower plant. For example, this is one of the fences or also other industrial objects or waste that we found from the area was part of it. We did recordings, collective sound recordings and preparation for the storytelling part, the audio part for Delft. And here is the installation that it transformed into. And these large format cyanotype textiles and the sound compositions were done together with, so Anlor, Paloma and me were starting with the text, and then Melo Chua and Kei Zhang did the composition for the sound. And so this is in the water tower in Radius, Delft. Also the driftwood, the hanging is made with driftwood. And then you see also piezos, so some of these smaller black lines are piezos, which are microphones that are very sensitive, and with the textile and you would touch them, they would trigger some of these sounds, which were partly partly field recordings and also field recordings from these harbors, boats, electro power plant sounds, riverbed, but also the water sounds that we took partly with hydrophones underwater as well. And then we had three stations with we spread the part, all this storytelling, what I also read to you in three parts that you could listen, and they would go on when you sit on the sitting positions. I will show you a little extract of a documentation, and you will hear a bit. I would go then to the next work, which we will also see as the film, and it's called Plankton Imaginary. So I will tell about the installation, the context, and how it was produced. It's a result of the collaboration between environmental scientist Maike Vogt from the ETH and myself. So Maike Vogt is a scientist specializing in marine biogeochemistry and microecology. And it was part of this exhibition, Experimental Ecology, Art and Science in Dialogue. And it was produced and shown at the exhibition space Kulturstiftung Basel Hageiger, KBHG, in Basel, Zurich, Switzerland, 2023. So actually just finished in October. So working with Maike needed a truly going into the process and we had to reflect on the social aspects, but also the imaginary aspects about plankton ecosystems. And we were thinking also beyond the scientific realm. We stepped out of our disciplinary comfort zones and allowed fusion of artistic and scientific perspectives. So 1 year we worked together. It was basically also getting to know each other because we didn't know each other before. We did a lot of experiments also in arts. I showed Maike techniques that she had never done before. We did research together, which were basically the field trips that we did to the Mediterranean coast, and worked together with marine biologist Marta Musso. And this way we then produced a concept and these artworks, where we also collaborated partly with other people, and this I will tell a bit who they were then later. So here you can see it is actually a two-channel video installation, and which has a multi-sound sound level. The films both are around 12 minutes, and they were shown as a loop. So you will also see when we look at the film that it doesn't have credits, and it kind of goes as one piece in the installation, what you see in the big screen here. What is important to show is that there is on the left side these textiles as well, dyed textiles, and a wooden panel to walk on. Maybe we can actually put the light for a moment down. Yeah, you see a bit better. So it's an interactive walk, sound walk, where lights and sounds are triggered when you move through the space. And these are also mainly hydrophone recordings that we did. So the second projection is a round projection on the floor here on the right side. And this one shows plankton that we filmed on these field trips together, also with Maike and Marta Musso. Marta Musso is also a taxonomist of plankton. So this was good for us also to recognize these different species. Here we have another perspective from the projection of the floor. There was also sculptures, and these ones are a bit more in the shadows of the textiles, and they are made out of recycled PET. We kind of followed forms of tintinnids that are a specific plankton type that is kind of like a glass shape, like a champagne-shaped glass. Also, we had some algae, microalgae, and also some zooplankton Artemia cultures in these glasses. And the staff from the Art Foundation took care of them and fed them. Here we see these are mainly microalgae. Yes. So shaping of these sculptures is that you heat them, and forming with heat gives the material a liquid form. So in this moment of getting hot, it has this wavy form, and when you take the heater off, then it keeps it. So the liquidity was important here. As well as actually plastic is mainly also like petroleum, and this is pressed. Most of the material that is the plankton bodies that fall on the bottom of the sea, which is pressed of millions of years, become then oil that we just burn away in the end. So, and we had these classes that we used the biochemistry lab glass blowing from the university and asked them to experiment a bit to make these balls. So for the film, we to film plankton, which is now the projection on the floor, we used this citizen science tools microscope. Basically, they were like high-end citizen science tools. They're called planktoscope and curiosity microscope. And these are designed to be accessible for non-institutional users and also, yeah, people who have interest in research and discovery of this water microbiome. They are affordable. They are made of ecologically conscious materials and they're easy to repair. And so, for example, you could get spare parts from this. So, but a lot of these tools are still in development. And I also want to continue working with these tools for my PhD in practice. Yes, the practical part. The interest is also to produce artworks and use it for community education, community practices. So what can we do with these kind of tools is in a way the awareness raising, but it's also a question of awareness raising of waters, ocean literacy, so the importance and the understanding of the of ocean and the importance of water, but also this question of decision making, who makes decision on what will be researched, and this is also part of the idea of these kind of tools. These questions are connected to procedural justice, environmental justice, and environmental citizenship, as well as agency, giving community members a voice, including the opportunity to express their opinions in trust and respect in inclusive decision-making processes that considers all needs. So the tools are also called non-invasive microscopes because you can use them in a field and you don't need to bring the plankton, the waters into a lab but you can work at the field with them and let them be back in the water. So here's two examples I will show you, and they are made by the Curiosity microscope at the Mediterranean Sea in Italy this spring. So what I'm interested in doing is exploring how visual arts and culture can open up opportunities, develop perspectives that allow us to relate differently and to develop capacity for empathy with the modern human. It's also about sensorial experience, the relationship to our bodies, to the world around us. It's about an embodiment derived from the perception of the body that is not based on the individualized, self-contained view of the body, but connected, embedded, entangled, decentralized, and relational. And then I think we can see the film. I put this QR code. You can photograph it for a German translation if you're interested. So the film will be in English and there's going to be subtitles in English. But here is a page in German. And we will also play this film for the people on the Zoom. And I would recommend to have headphones for them. But, yeah, depending on if you are alone or with others. And for the space, for the room, we will show the film from this computer where we have the sound installed.
Transformed into fossil fuels and eventually compressed into stone. This can be released back into the atmosphere, thus infinitely sustaining the circle of matter and life. Perfectly adapted to life underwater. Much of our planktonic life is known as transparent. Transparency is common in aquatic life forms, though it is rather rare in terrestrial systems. We live as the very element that surrounds us, without an inside and outside. To understand what it entails to be, to live as, to perceive as, water in water, to unfold horizons that are not structured as dualistic. What does it mean to imagine the world from a fluid point of view? Transparency is an advantage in liquid environments. As water absorbs and refracts light, thus distorting and swallowing color, which makes color useful for signaling only in shallow waters such as coastal environments and coral reefs. However, most of the ocean is utterly dark, and the only light to illuminate color would be the bioluminescence of us deep sea creatures ourselves. Pelagic habitats are homogeneous and unstructured, with no places for prey to hide from their predators. Being invisible enhances chances of survival. It is the optimal camouflage in this transparent medium. female, I am both. I transcend the limits of your imagination. Hundreds of millions of years of evolutionary history defying your roles and stereotypes.
How can
so many aquatic species coexist in such a homogeneous environment with such few resources to sustain our vast biodiversity? Some say it is because marine environments are never at rest, dynamically changing and evolving permanently. According to this theory, ecosystems are thus in eternal flux, perpetually creating new and destroying transient niches for organisms to inhabit as they follow the environmental conditions they experience. Others concluded that this is due to biotic effects, such as the selection of specific drifting groups by their grazers, with predators tending to target their most abundant prey. And yet another theory postulates that biodiversity is sustained by the variety of lifestyles, parasites, or symbiotic interactions between different species. We push a singular agenda construct beyond the binary framework. We explore fluid, complementary, and shifting identities that change with the environment. Multiplicity is paramount in our planetary systems.
Working together
is crucial. And differences are necessary so that each and everyone's niche is unique.
Symbiotic relationships
are how we live and thrive.
Instead of distrusting
the incomprehensible otherness of our contemporaries,
we celebrate our differences.
We develop queer identities and processes far from the normative dichotomy. We are among the earliest organisms to have evolved on this planet. We did not all come into this existence at the same time, but some groups of us have existed for more than 3.5 billion years.
Having been around
for all this time means we have been exposed to a vast range of environmental conditions,
from cycling temperature fluctuations or differing carbon dioxide levels, we have been dynamically adapting to Earth. As a result, photosynthesis emerged from us finding a path to survive. As time moved forward, we produced oxygen molecules that began to fill up Earth's atmosphere, slowly making it possible for other organisms to begin their own evolutionary path. We have had an immense amount of time to adapt perfectly to the ever-changing environment Earth poses. This dynamic transformation has also not halted as humans entered into this planetary narrative. Although human existence is comparatively minuscule, this has not prevented them from having a cataclysmic impact. Human actions have changed the course of Earth's history, but most significantly, they have put themselves in danger. We have the ability to outwit human perturbation. Life, including ours, will continue onwards regardless of whether human beings will be here to observe. Their climate crisis is merely a ripple in our history. They are, in fact, a transient phenomenon. If Earth's record were compressed into a single day, the evolution of human beings would only appear in the last second of the evening hours.
So now we missed this part of the Ergo-Reco documentation, but maybe you can imagine what you see, and I can just tell you more if you have questions. So I will open up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.